Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. So our next guest has a whole bunch of letters behind his name. MD, MPH, FAHA, FACC, FNLA. Dr. Patrick McBride has practiced medicine for 40 years, and now he is an emeritus professor at the UW-SMPH Department of Medicine's Section of Cardiovascular Medicine and Department of Family Medicine. But if I kept reading, he's been the dean of students, associate dean for faculty, but if I kept reading all of his accomplishments, we would run out of time. So I'll cut to the part where he is an author of the book, The Luckiest Boy in the World, where he chronicles his time as a teenager when he was the bat boy for the Milwaukee Brewers, worked for the Green Bay Packers and Milwaukee Bucks, all from the age of 15 to 22 until he went to school at Madison. Dr. Patrick McBride, thank you for joining us today. I'm so excited to talk about your book and your story.
Well, thank you for having me.
We should also say that one of my oldest friends is Dr. Patrick McBride's son, Sean McBride. I've known him since high school. And so that's how you and I know each other. But I remember last year when this book came out, because, I mean, obviously last year with the Bucks winning a championship, the last time they won, it was when you were working for them. And so you released this book, which you must have been working on prior to them winning last year. And so, I mean, that is a wild rack of a resume as a teen before you were 22 years old. How did that even happen that you got all these jobs?
Yeah, it was very exciting to see the Bucks do it again. You know, it was a really remarkable stroke of circumstances. You know, I woke up one morning and opened up the Milwaukee Sentinel, and there was an ad to be the first bat boy for the Brewers. So it was a 25-word essay contest, and I entered the contest, which was judged by actually Eddie Matthews, former Milwaukee Brave. And he picked my essay, and I won. And next thing I know, I'm inside the locker room, which I'd been sitting outside of as a fan for many years when the Braves were there. And the Green Bay Packers played 5 games in Milwaukee then. And, you know, the Packers had recently won 2 Super Bowls, the first 2 Super Bowls, and we were nuts about the Packers as kids. And so if you worked really hard in the locker room, the guy running the locker room would offer you a job to work at the Packer games. And I got to do that. And while I was working that summer, the Bucks were a new team and had won the coin flip to get a guy named Lou Alcindor, who'd actually already changed his name to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, but didn't announce it. And when I heard on the radio that the Bucks were going to get Lou Alcindor, I ran to the phone and called the Bucks right away and asked how you could be a ball boy. And they said, "Wow, your timing's amazing. We're interviewing tomorrow." So I took the bus down Wisconsin Avenue and went to their office and interviewed and got the job. And the next thing I know, I was sitting on the bench with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
There's so many questions. So back up. So first of all, what was your essay about when you applied to be the bat boy for the Milwaukee Brewers?
Well, I knew Bud Selig was working really hard to get a team back to Milwaukee. So my essay was, I would like to be a bat boy because I would be doing a small part toward bringing baseball back to Milwaukee. I would hope the spirit I would show would be contagious, 25 words. So I knew if I hit the right theme, I had a shot, but I didn't think I'd win.
Wow. So then, were you working all 3 at the same time because they had their seasons didn't overlap that much?
Yes, I was. You know, I had 60 to 70 hour weeks. You know, when in those days when we worked in the locker room, we were expected to polish the shoes, do the janitorial work, clean the locker room, clean their uniforms, cook food for the players, you know, pass out the towels, clean the towels. We did everything. So I got there about 2:30 in the afternoon. I had to change my schedule at school. And I would get out about 12:30, 1 o'clock, and then either take the bus home or ride my bike, get on a I eventually bought a motorcycle with the money I made, and we only made $10 a game and for 12 hours. And I saved up my money. I worked some other jobs. I scooped ice cream at Baskin-Robbins and eventually worked at a car dealership.
You had other jobs on top of this?
Yeah, I had to.
Also,
I paid my way through school and bought my books and... So we all had to buy our own clothes and everything. I came from a family of 7 kids, so we had to pay our way through.
Dr. McBride, I want to back up just for a second. You not only had to clean their shoes and their uniforms, but you had to cook for them, and they paid you $10 a game?
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. They broke every child labor law in the state.
Yeah, clearly.
Nobody was going to turn them in. You know, we were so happy to be with these players. You know, I worked in the visiting locker room for 6 out of the 7 years, and so I got to meet every visiting player in the league, and I worked an all-star game, and I worked old-timers games, so I met famous players like Joe DiMaggio and Ted Williams and Ernie Banks and Stan Musial, and the dignitaries came in. I met Henry Kissinger. I met JFK when I was a kid. I met, you wouldn't believe it, and I had stories about all of them in the book. So I had just incredible opportunities.
Can you share any of those stories on air as a teaser for people to go buy the book?
I think my favorite story was the first year I was working there in 1969. I looked down the locker room and I see Joe DiMaggio sitting at a picnic table. At that time, Joe DiMaggio was the spokesperson for the first drip coffee maker called Mr. Coffee. And so he was called Mr. Coffee. And that's why we still say, hey, I'm going to go get a cup of Joe today because of Joe DiMaggio. That's right. And I knew he'd been married to Marilyn Monroe. So I'm thinking, how do I get his autograph? You know, so I walk up to this actually really shy guy and I say, excuse me, Mr. DiMaggio, can I ask you a question? He said, sure, son, what is it? And I said, is it true that you still put a dozen red roses on Marilyn Monroe's grave every week? And he looked at me like, did you just ask me the most personal question you could possibly ask a person? Because they had a very troubled marriage. I knew he always loved Marilyn Monroe. I knew the story from my family. And he said, well, yes, son, it's true. And I said, you know, I hope someday that I meet somebody that I love that much, that I would do that. And he said, son, that's really the nicest thing I've ever heard. And I said, could I get your autograph? So I have a picture of the autograph in the book, and it was one of the nicest autographs I ever got from one of the world's most famous people.
Wow, that is an unbelievable story. So who were some of the other characters? Like, what was it like to work with Kareem? I feel like the movie or the limited series just came out that was with mixed reviews on how accurate it was of once Kareem was on the Lakers and winning time and everything. But was he a pretty serious guy? Because I feel like that's the picture that's always been depicted of him.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, and that was a very inaccurate movie because working in the room, I say in the book, the three most misunderstood characters are Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Ted Williams, and Billy Martin in the book because they were really kind to us. Kareem was terrific in the locker room. He was just an extraordinarily shy and introverted guy because he was 6'9" by the time he was in eighth grade and 7 feet by the time he was, you know, in high school. And so he was always gawked at and everybody bugged him all the time, knew who he was. He never got a minute's peace outside of the locker room. But inside the locker room, he was funny. He was kind, very serious. He was always playing chess and reading serious books. You know, he's written over 25 books, and he's got a great podcast. He's got a great series that he writes on email. And he, you know, to us, he was extraordinarily kind. You know, I still know him today, and he, you know, forms lifelong relationships. He's a terrific guy. So he always said please and thank you. His father was a policeman and a trumpet player, and so he's one of the world's experts on jazz. He has the largest jazz record collection in the world. He's just a great guy, you know. And Ted Williams was disliked by the media because he always felt like the media had mistreated him. But in the locker room, he was a wonderful guy. You know, I asked him one time about hitting a baseball, and he said to me, well, why do you need help hitting a baseball? And I said, well, I have a really bad left eye. And he said, well, how bad is it? And I said, 2600. And he said, have you ever thought of pitching? And then he got up and walked away. And that was the end. That was the end of my baseball career. But he was really, really great to us in the clubhouse, and the players worshipped him. He was really a great guy. So, you know, I had all these extraordinary encounters, and I was on the bench for an NBA championship. you know, I got to watch All-Star games. That All-Star game was extraordinary. Henry Kissinger threw out the first ball for the All-Star game at a time that Richard Nixon was having to deal with Watergate and couldn't attend. He was in such deep trouble. But Henry Kissinger was essentially running the world. He was in charge of the Paris peace talks for Vietnam. He was running the Middle East peace talks. He was running the Russian SALT treaty talks. And in walks Henry Kissinger, and I shook his hand. And, you know, I mean, it's pretty extraordinary for a kid.
For a kid! This is all before you were 22. That's unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. That's right. I was the youngest equipment manager in pro sports history. A 55-year-old wonderful guy that I knew died of a heart attack. And when I called the Bucks to ask who was going to replace him, they said, well, we've got a replacement. I said, who is it? And they said, you're going to do it. And the general manager got on the phone and he said to me, Irish, that's what they called me. He said, are you up to it? And I was going into my senior year in high school. And they said, well, sure, I think I can do it. And I suddenly inherited a $100,000 budget in an NBA basketball team. Yeah.
Never having spent much time in locker rooms myself, I'm always curious about the hijinks that go on. Are there any things that you can share?
Oh, yeah. So there's a real distinct difference between baseball, football, and basketball. So baseball players act like kids because they come straight out of high school and go into the minor leagues, and they really never grow up. That was the way it was then. And basketball players all went to college then, all graduated from college, and so they were much more serious. And they go city to city to city. Baseball players stay in town for 3 to 4 days, and they play tricks on each other constantly. So they're, you know, sticking matches in your foot from behind and lighting them for a hot foot, or they're sticking hot balm in your underwear, or, you know, soaking your pants in the shower and sticking them in your locker and cutting them off. And I mean, there's just constant tricks going on in the locker room. And I remember a guy bought a waterbed mattress, and one of the players paid us to take it and tie it to the top of the scoreboard. And, you know, all that stuff's in the book. Football players showed up on Sunday. We only got to see the Packers or the visiting team on Sunday, and they were so jacked up by the time we saw them. They were just flexing in front of the mirror and grunting, and we just never even got a chance to even converse with them. We're basketball players and football players. We spend a lot of time with.
Oh, that's incredible. All right, so we're going to keep you through the break. So if you can hold on when we come back, I want to talk about how you made an adjustment, or like the transition from sports into medicine, and also the difference of writing a medical book versus a memoir. So our guest right now is Dr. Patrick McBride. He'll be here after we come back from this break.
Really here tonight.